Chapter 52. Same day, after his making submission to our church, was married to your mother a few weeks before you were born. My Lord Viscount Castlewood, Marquis of Esmond, by King James patent, which I myself took to your father, your lordship was christened at St. Gudule by the same cure who married your parents, and by the name of Henry Thomas, son of E. Thomas, officer Anglois, and Gertrude Mays. You see you belong to us from your birth, and why I did not christen you, when you became my dear little pupil at Castlewood. Your father's wound took a favorable turn. Perhaps his conscience was eased by the right he had done, and to the surprise of the doctors he recovered. But as his health came back, his wicked nature too, returned. He was tired of the poor girl, whom he had ruined, and receiving some remittance from his uncle, my lord the old Viscount, then in England, he pretended business, promised return, and never saw your poor mother more. He owned to me, in confession first, but afterwards in talk before your aunt, his wife, else I never could have disclosed, what I now tell you, that on coming to London he read a pretended confession to poor Gertrude Mays Gertrude Esmond of his having been married in England previously, before uniting himself with her, said that his name was not Thomas, that he was about to quit Europe for the Virginian plantations, where, indeed, your family had a grant of land from King Charles I, sent her a supply of money, the half of the last 100 guineas he had, entreated her pardon, and bade her farewell. Poor Gertrude never thought that the news in this letter might be untrue as the rest of your father's conduct to her. But though a young man of her own degree, who knew her history, and whom she liked, before she saw the English gentleman who was the cause of all her misery, offered to marry her, and to adopt you as his own child, and give you his name, she refused him. This refusal only angered her father, who had taken her home. She never held up her head there, being the subject of constant unkindness after her fall, and some devout ladies of her acquaintance offering to pay a little pension for her, she went into a convent, and you were put out to nurse. A sister of the young fellow who would have adopted you as his son was the person who took charge of you. Your mother and this person were cousins. As he had just lost a child of her own, which you replaced, your own mother being too sick and feeble to feed you, and presently your nurse grew so fond of you, that she even grudged letting you visit the convent where your mother was, and where the nuns petted the little infant, as they pitied and loved its unhappy parent. Her vocation became stronger every day, and at the end of 2 years she was received as a sister of the house. Your nurse's family were silk weavers out of France, whither they returned to Arras in French Flanders, shortly before your mother took her vows, carrying you with them, then a child of 3 years old. 'Twas a town, before the late vigorous measures of the French king, full of Protestants, and here your nurse's father, old Pastoureau, he with whom you afterwards lived at Ealing, adopted the Reformed doctrines, perverting all his house with him. They were expelled thence by the edict of his most Christian majesty, and came to London, and set up their looms in Spitalfields. The old man brought a little money with him, and carried on his trade, but in a poor way. He was a widower. By this time his daughter, a widow too, kept house for him, and his son and he labored together at their vocation. Meanwhile your father had publicly owned his conversion just before King Charles's death, in whom our church had much such another convert, was reconciled to my Lord Viscount Castlewood, and married, as you know, to his daughter. It chanced that the younger Pastoureau, going with a piece of brocade to the mercer who employed him, on Ludgate Hill, met his old rival coming out of an ordinary there. Pastoureau knew your father at once, seized him by the collar, and upbraided him as a villain, who had seduced his mistress, and afterwards deserted her and her son. Mr. Thomas Esmond also recognized Pastoureau at once, besought him to calm his indignation, and not to bring a crowd round about them, and bade him to enter into the tavern, out of which he had just stepped, when he would give him any explanation. Pastor O entered and heard the landlord order the drawer to show Captain Thomas to a room. It was by his Christian name that your father was familiarly called at his tavern haunts, which, to say the truth, were none of the most reputable. I must tell you that Captain Thomas, or my Lord Viscount afterwards, was never at a loss for a story, and could cajole a woman or a dun with a volubility and an air of simplicity at the same time, of which many a creditor of his has been the dupe. His tales used to gather verisimilitude as he went on with them. He strung together fact after fact with a wonderful rapidity and coherence. It required, saving your presence, a very long habit of acquaintance with your father, to know when his lordship was ill, telling the truth or no. He told me with rueful remorse, when he was ill for the fear of death, said him instantly repenting, and with shrieks of laughter when he was well, his lordship having a very great sense of humor, how in a half an hour's time, and before a bottle was drunk, he had completely succeeded in biting poor Pastor O. The seduction he owned to, that he could not help. He was quite ready with tears at a moment's warning, and shed them profusely, to melt his credulous listener. He wept for your mother even more than Pastor O did, who cried very heartily, "Poor fellow, as my lord informed me, he swore upon his honor that he had twice sent money to Brussels, and mentioned the name of the merchant with whom it was lying for poor Gertrude's use. He did not even know whether as he had a child or no, or whether she was alive or dead, but got these facts easily out of honest Pastor O's answers to him. When he heard that she was in a convent, he said he hoped to end his days in one himself, should he survive his wife, whom he hated, and had been forced by a cruel father to marry, and when he was told that Gertrude's son was alive, and actually in London, I started, says he, for then, damn, my wife was expecting to lie in, and I thought, should this old put, my father-in-law, run rusty, here would be a good chance to frighten him. He expressed the deepest gratitude to the Pastor O family for the care of the infant. He were now near 6 years old, and on Pastor O bluntly telling him, when he proposed to go that instant, and see the darling child, that they never wished to see his ill-omened face again within their doors, that he might have the boy, though they should all be very sorry to lose him, and that they would take his money, they being poor, if he gave it, or bring him up, by God's help, as they had hitherto done, without. He acquiesced in this at once, with a sigh, said, "Well, 'twas better that the dear child should remain with friends who had been so admirably kind to him," and in his talk to me afterwards, honestly praised and admired the weaver's conduct and spirit, owned that the Frenchman was a right fellow, and he, the Lord have mercy upon him, a sad villain. Your father, Mr. Holt went on to say, was good-natured with his money when he had it, and having that day received a supply from his uncle, gave the weaver 10 pieces with perfect freedom, and promised him further remittances. He took down eagerly Pastor O's name, and place of abode in his table book, and when the other asked him for his own, gave, with the utmost readiness, his name as Captain Thomas, New Lodge, Penzance, Cornwall. He said he was in London for a few days only on business connected with his wife's property, described her as a shrew, though a woman of kind disposition, and depicted his father as a Cornish squire, in an infirm state of health, at whose death he hoped for something handsome, when he promised richly to reward the admirable protector of his child, and to provide for the boy. "And by gad, sir," he said to me in his strange laughing way, "I ordered a piece of brocade of the very same pattern as that which the fellow was carrying, and presented it to my wife for a morning wrapper, to receive company, after she lay in of our little boy. Your little pension was paid regularly enough, and when your father became Viscount Castlewood on his uncle's demise, I was employed to keep a watch over you, and 'twas at my instance that you were brought home. Your foster mother was dead. Her father made acquaintance with a woman whom he married, who quarreled with his son, The faithful creature came back to Brussels, to be near the woman he loved, and died too, a few months before her. Will you see her cross in the convent cemetery? The superior is an old penitent of mine, and remembers Sieur Marie Madeleine fondly still. Esmond came to this spot in one sunny evening of spring, and saw, amidst a thousand black crosses, casting their shadows across the grassy mounds, that particular one which marked his mother's resting place. Many more of those poor creatures that lay there had adopted that same name, with which sorrow had rebaptized her, and which fondly seemed to hint their individual story of love and grief. He fancied her in tears and darkness, kneeling at the foot of her cross, under which her cares were buried. Surely he knelt down, and said his own prayer there, not in sorrow, so much as in awe, for even his memory had no recollection of her, and in pity for the pangs which the gentle soul in life had been made to suffer. To this cross she brought them. For this heavenly bridegroom she exchanged the husband who had wooed her, the traitor who had left her. A thousand such hillocks lay round about, the gentle daisies springing out of the grass over them, and each bearing its cross and requise cat. A nun, veiled in black, was kneeling hard by, at a sleeping sister's bedside, so fresh made, that the spring had scarce had time to spin a coverlet for it. Beyond the cemetery walls you had glimpses of life and the world, and the spires and gables of the city. A bird came down from a roof opposite, and lit first on a cross, and then on the grass below it, whence it flew away presently with a leaf in its mouth. Then came a sound as of chanting, from the chapel of the sisters hard by. Others had long since filled the place which poor Mary Magdalene once had there, were kneeling at the same stall, and hearing the same hymns and prayers in which her stricken heart had found consolation. Might she sleep in peace, might she sleep in peace, and we too, when our struggles and pains are over. But the earth is the Lord's as the heaven is, we are alike his creatures here and yonder. I took a little flower off the hillock and kissed it, and went my way, like the bird, that had just lighted on the cross by me, back into the world again. Silent receptacle of death, tranquil depth of calm, out of reach of tempest and trouble. I felt as one who had been walking below the sea, and treading amidst the bones of shipwrecks. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.